All right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testor, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. Interrupting me, as always, is the one and only super flavorful master of weens,
snacks,
Mr. Mike Linneman.
Good to see you again, Anthony Marsalis. It feels like it's been like 100 weeks between you and I had a chat.
Yeah, it's been a while, definitely. Dude, I've been all over the place.
I know you've been grinding. I've been preparing for ElixCon, the big art convention of the year. For people that don't know, it's the largest fantasy convention, sci-fi, imaginative realism show in the country. So basically, all the major artists go there with paint. So anybody that paints goes there. Sometimes some digital people kick it too, but mainly the painters of magic hang out there, and it really is this couple days out near Philly. And I've kind of been underwater really getting ready for that. But Ant, enough of us. No one cares who we are. What are we here to talk about today?
So today we are doing another one of our Flavor Gem episodes, this one on Ixalan, the latest set to be put out by Wizards of the Coast.
Sure.
Pirates, dinosaurs. It's pretty much Commander, but like in a set.
It's like a full set of like all the things.
It's just Commander. It's that goofy picture of this is what Commander's like with like dinosaurs and laser beams on their foreheads.
That's exactly what it is. I brought that up on like Twitter the other day, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, that's so clever!" And I'm like, "This is like 8 years old, guys."
100%. This image is existed forever, and it's finally just a set.
Someone finally was in a design meeting and was like, "Hey, you know that meme picture?"
What's funny is like it takes them so long, right, to make a set that
sure.
What probably happened is that image came out, and they're like, "Oh, that's funny. Let's just do it."
Call it a day. And I mean, even some of the images, I'm like, man, like the Dino Riders is the term if you want to look it up. But what's a flavor gem? What is this thing we do, Ant, when our sets come up?
I mean, normally what we do is we go through the set. We have five categories that highlight the five different aspects of Vorthos. And we pick, Mike and I each pick a card that we think satisfies that particular aspect. And it's just a card that, you know, he or I think is something that you should just pay attention to. It's not necessarily the best art in the set. It's not necessarily the best writing in the set. It's just something that we wanted to call attention to because maybe there's something hidden that you weren't paying attention to, or something that you didn't know, or just something that we personally think is really cool.
So for those that are trying to follow along and say, what's this Vorthos business? We'll explain it. So first aspect of it is the artist. Ant, what would that mean?
Right, so the artist is a Vorthos who finds pleasure in just enjoying the art of magic. So any type of visual aspect of the game, the easiest way to do this is card art, but any type of visual that's tied to the game, that's something that the artist is interested in.
It's kind of like the framing elements are actually part of that aspect too, because it's an aesthetic.
Yes, card frames would 100% be a artist mentality.
All right, Ant, so what are you coming in hot with? What do you got
first? The one that I have is Drowned Catacomb. This is actually a reprint of a card that's showing up in Ixalan with new art. The last time we saw this, and I love reprints. I love when you can repurpose reprints and give it a different flavorful spin.
Sure.
And so the last time we saw Drowned Catacomb, it was literally just like a wet cave.
Yep.
And to take that idea of a catacomb, because, you know, you think of a catacomb, you think of like, you know, underneath France or underneath Paris,
yep.
You know, just like rows upon rows of dead.
Indiana
right?
Jones.
And
yeah, yeah.
If you have a sunken ship, technically you could have that same kind of vibe of just like rows of, you know, dead or drowned pirates, sailors, that sort of thing. So the idea that this collection of ships that got bashed against a rocky shore would create a catacomb of sorts, a drowned catacomb. Like, I mean, it's perfect. It's a perfect use of this name, giving it a nice flavorful spin that totally fits Ixalan.
I love reprints when done really exceptionally seamless, when everyone's like, oh, that makes sense. Like, there's no controversy. There's no real hubbub about it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
But to that person building that pirate deck, they're losing their mind that they have, like, the perfect flavorful, different image that slots in there perfectly. And for that person, I mean, that makes the set entirely hum, doesn't it?
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are the little things that, like, to your point, exactly, like a pirate fan who maybe they had a pirate themed commander deck for years, and you know, they go out of their way to look for islands that maybe have boats in them or something
course,
like that.
Of course.
Now they finally have that dual land that perfectly slides into their flavor jam, and that's exactly what, you know, we're looking for in a gem.
I dig it. You went with a rare, decent rare too. I went with a mythic rare, and that card is Admiral Beckett Brass by Jason Rainville. I mean, the story is already out that he basically painted his mom, which is pretty cool, and he and his uncle are the flying guys in the background, which makes me laugh too for good reference. But I just want to point out that if nothing else, we get a great commander. Like, we get a fun pirate boosting commander, 4-drop 3/3, okay, and then you get some shenanigans. You get to steal something. Cool. Like, at worst, we get a good card. Like, great card for the casual crowd. That's probably not going to be really expensive because it's cool. But at best, imagine you're a, 55-year-old woman that started playing Magic in, like, 93 or 94, right? Or 95. Like, let's just say, whatever, been playing for 20 years. Maybe in their 50s. You know, they played in their mid-30s in between D&D games. And then they see this and say, holy crap, that kind of looks like me. Oh, this is a card for someone like me that wants to play maybe a casual commander deck, and it has someone that's an older person. You don't really normally get to see that unless it's like a sage,
right,
or like a priest or something really like tropey, instead of like being like a hero, which you got to see Arlen Korb, but she didn't really do anything. She wasn't really any much stories. But here, it's not intended to be that. Oh, it's a pirate captain.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
cool.
And I think that the even cooler part about having her be like a middle-aged woman is, you know, being a pirate's not exactly like the safest job in the world. So if she's made it this long, you got to imagine that she's real good at it.
Probably a D's captain.
Really good pirate. Right.
Probably a D's captain. She still has most of her arms and legs too.
Yeah, and even you know, topical for this month. Like, if you're a mom and you have a kid who's into Magic and they want to dress up Halloween and you guys want to do like a combo costume,
awesome.
Like,
absolutely. I was gonna get to that point next. This would be like, oh, this actually could be a cosplay card too. But really, it's an artist appreciation thing for someone of that age group. And then if your kid wants to be Chandra or Jace, you can be with that. Like, oh cool, you just gotta make the hat and, you know, kind of get a pirate costume. So great work on that, great art description writing, and Rainville just took it to the next level, where instead of kind of phoning it in, he really, really took it seriously, and there's already fan art of it that he's like sending to his mom, which is pretty hilarious because it's, you know, Inktober. It's a whole phenomenon that artists do, inking of random things, and this came up in one of them, which is super hilarious to me. Okay, so that's first aspect, one of the four. Second one is the writer, and what kind of worthless is that?
Right, so the writer, similar to the artist, the writer is someone who appreciates the written aspects of Magic. This is most prominent in names and flavor text, near and dear to my heart, but, you know, this could be anything, just like, you know, quick things written on the sides of packaging, or, you know, the tagline that's used to sell the set, things like that. Just any kind of written word, doesn't necessarily have to be story related, but
right,
that helps immerse you further into the world, in this case, into the world of Ixalan.
I mean, can you find a better word, single word, in this set? Single word.
Skullduggery. You know what's funny is I worked on this set. And skullduggery was submitted probably more than any other word.
Really?
On like 7 different cards. Like, we tried so hard to find like the perfect spot for it. You could see the writers all fighting over, like, no, I think it's gonna go here. Like, no, it's totally going here. It's totally going here. And then somebody, I remember working on the set, and somebody put it on this card. This card didn't have art yet. It just had like the standard. It didn't even have a sketch. Right. And so, to this person's credit, whoever got this one, putting it on an instant where it's just a quick little combat trick, +1/-1, like, that's such a great spot for this word, because it's
right,
one word. It's a instant. It's a single mana cost. It does one quick thing.
It's a tricky thing.
It's pirate themed. Like, it's such a perfect spot for that word.
I'm so happy it got put in there, because I mean, there's very few things that are like so piratey. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this word has to be in there somewhere. I hope it's something that's fun.
Yeah. Oh my god, I had a blast trying to write for pirates, because the thing too is like, you can't. It's magic, right? And it has to have like a magic spin on it, so you can't just do things like "Arr, me matey" and like call it a card. Like,
it
doesn't work that way, right? So, for my flavor gem for the writer, I picked Boneyard Parlay.
Okay.
Because I think this is another great example of using pirate terms, but in a way that's still true to like magic and magic's themes and flavors and whatnot. Like, at its core, magic is a fantasy game, right? And it's got fantasy properties. And so I remember seeing this card's art early on in writing for the set. And I remember thinking, like, what the heck is going on here? Because you have a pirate in a cave standing on a pile of dinosaur bones. And awesome. He looks like he's raising the dead, right? And if you read the card, like, obviously the card kind of further infers you that he's doing some form of graveyard manipulation, right?
Yep.
And, like, those are some weird things. Like, you don't normally see a pirate necromancer. Like, when's the last time you've seen that in popular fiction, right?
Not often.
You don't. So the idea of taking like a parlay, like a common pirate term, and saying like, all right, well, we're going to do it in a boneyard. Like, it just, that plays really well, and it speaks perfectly to what this card is about. And I think I'm very jealous of this name. Like, I wish I could say it was mine.
Well, it's also a no flavor text card. So those always have like extra specialness.
Yeah. It has to be like really drive it home. Right.
Yeah. I totally get that. Side note, this guy also, looks like someone, if you've ever played Monkey Island.
Oh my god, yeah.
So if you've ever played that series, he looks like LeChuck. And he's like the voodoo. He was really big into voodoo. It was like the old games from the 90s. What was Secret of Monkey Island?
Gail loved Monkey Island.
All of those different aspects. It was a whole series of it. It was big LucasArts games in the 90s. And as soon as I saw this, I'm like, oh my god, someone's a LeChuck fan, and they totally snuck that in there. Very clever. But yeah, good name, fun art. I think it's a good piece here. Next up, we have the Oracle. This one's the hard one to understand, and why is that?
Well, it's partly because the name it's a little tricky. So, like, in classic mythology, the Oracle was the person who kind of linked the regular pleb human to the gods, right? They were the filter that the gods were able to communicate with humans and vice versa, right?
Sure.
So in my mind, the Oracle of magic is the lens that you're able to take magic, which is a fake, you know, fantasy property, and bring it into the real world, or vice versa, taking something from the real world and pushing it into magic. Your LeChuck example would be a great way of saying, hey, I'm a LeChuck fan. I want to put LeChuck into magic.
Word.
Thus, I'll do it through art, right?
Sure.
But so my example here is for Hierophant's Chalice, right?
Okay.
If you look at it, it's a playmat. Like, you can very easily recreate this entire scene at your Friday night magic game if you just have a playmat that looks like that and drink some Merlot.
Drink some Merlot at F&M. Yeah. Okay, yeah,
like that's such an easy way to make you feel like in your real life, in the real world, that you're actually part of the vampire tribe. Maybe you have a vampire commander deck and you really want to play it up, feel a little more immersed. Make this playmat, drink some Merlot, have a good time. Like, straight up.
I mean, that sounds decent. I didn't really think that would be a part of it. I think usually cosplay is what people gravitate toward.
Right. Cosplay is the easiest, yeah.
Okay, well then I'm gonna go easy mode. I'm gonna go full couture clothing with Headwater Sentries. I understand that merfolk really got a different look in this set. Green merfolk, what does that even mean? We're gonna have merfolk that are incredibly colorful, almost the most it's been pushed for merfolk, instead of being, you know, just blue or greenish, that they're going to have a wide variety of fuchsia. And I think this Headwater Centuries is one of those fun Pinteresty builds. Like, have you seen those where it's like, dress as Pikachu, but it wouldn't be looking like a Pikachu. It'd be like a yellow dress with like a black necklace and like certain cufflinks that would like...
Yeah, like you're taking the color palette and you're applying it in a different way. Right.
Same thing goes here. I could see like a dress at an event or like say you're going to a gala and someone dresses a little piratey and looks maybe a little more like Jace, and maybe, you know, your date has a dress that looks like a merfolk.
Yeah, so you could do like a sweeping blue gown with like purple accents at the bottom, and maybe a jade green boa or something around your shoulders. Yeah.
So there could be this playful, and not like geek prom, because obviously those are like a little over the top. It's like, I get it. I get what steampunk is. Like, it's fine. But like really deconstructing the color palette. And if this was, say they had a gala at I don't know, any of Child's Play, for example, the big charity that Wizards and a bunch of other West Coasters take part in. Say they had a big gala there and someone was dressed in someone like this. Right away, all the gamers would be like, oh, you're dressed like the merfolk of Ixalan. Like, right away, people would know just by color scheme that it's that iconic. The same thing happened with, like, Ulamog and Kozilek back in the Battle for Zendikar block, that they had certain colors. Ulamog was
and it was very easy to tell apart.
Totally. You could just be like, that drone, that's a Kozilek one, or, oh, that's an Ulamog one. That's how I was like, where Emrakul? Because her colors are there. Where's that one? Where's that one? So I love that this idea that you could still have that and break down to really its elements and still cosplay without literally putting in hours and hours and hours to build a costume, that you can just be color palette and it would work.
Right.
All right. Next up, the Dreamer.
Yes.
I forget what this one is. I don't know.
Okay, that's why I'm here. So the Dreamer is the Vorthos who cares about the storyline. So this can literally be anything. Art, writing, literally anything, as long as it furthers the story. So a great example for art would be that one time when we got a new Ajani printed and he was holding Elspeth's cloak. That furthers the story. For writing, the most obvious thing is the story that's put out every Wednesday. Right. If you want to find the story, you can get the story cards in Ixalan, and there's a handy little link at the bottom, mtgstory.com.
Right.
Or it can be a card, flavor text, that furthers the story of a particular character. So, or that tells a story. Right. The one that I picked for this one is Vance's Blasting Cannons, because this card literally tells you a story of something that happened on Ixalan. Right.
Spicy. And
so you literally get to see this broadside assault of this Captain Vance. He's shooting his cannons, or she, actually.
She.
I think it's she, right?
I'm pretty sure.
Shooting it's cannons.
Pretty sure it's a she. Well, yeah.
I think so.
Yes. Yes. It's
Captain
yes.
Vance. Shooting cannons into the side of this volcanic island, right? Literally carving a home for the pirates, you know, on board their ship. And so when we transform this enchantment, we literally get to see that Spitfire Bastion now shooting back, right? And I just think that whole little mini story is comical in that it's like, yeah, I shot my way into this home, and now I'm going to shoot my way back out.
It's kind of like, fun,
but you know, it's just like a cool little story. Does it further Jace's, you know, trials on Ixalan? Maybe not.
No,
but it's fun. Like, it's a fun little window into the flavor of the plane.
How about how it do? And I think flip cards, it's great to show that. You get to show a progression. Sure. This literally, it's like a before after.
Yeah.
Point in time.
I mean, this is a flip card done right. Like,
To
double face cards are so set up for you to be able to tell mini stories like this. I loved seeing them here because, you know, when we get them in Innistrad, most of the time they're werewolves, and all of those stories are kind of the same beat. It's like, yeah, okay, you're a human, and then you turn into a monster, and after a while, like, they just kind of become repetitive, right? But here we're getting these literal, like, moments in time where it's like, okay, here's the before, here's the after, and you can easily piece together what happened here.
It's almost like you could have 20 or at least 10 story spotlights with like five major and these are the five minor.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this
actually, it's funny you say that because they if all five of the story moment cards would have been double face cards, then technically they could have had 10 story.
They could have had 10. Yeah, I got that right away. As soon as I saw that, I was like, I wonder if they're going to do. Yeah, no. And I think that's actually better because we want the story itself, the magic, official magic story, to give us that depth. And I pushed against you on this because I chose Ixalan's Binding, which basically shows Jace getting stuck, right?
Right.
Because this, it's an exact moment in time. Story spotlight. It has to be, you don't get to see what he does next. Like, literally, it's like, if this was the preview to the set and the card would slowly show up, you'd be like, oh, Jace is stuck there. Why? And then that opens up so many doors that you get to walk off from. Like, all right, Jace is stuck here. What's Ixalan? How is he lost? What's going on?
Right.
And that kind of open-endedness, even in a first story spotlight card, really, really sets things up well. And it's not a rare. I always love story spotlights that aren't rares, so people get to see them more often.
Yeah.
And I know that a couple Tumblr fans, Jay most notably, talked about what's above Jace's head. It's the rose. And it's the two symbols combined into one, such that this piece, that this thing's gone missing, isn't from one perspective. Multiple people, multiple groups have had this power in the past, and somehow, binding together, it's forced planeswalkers to stay here. Like, it wasn't one group or one tribe that has this, like, protective barrier. It's multiple groups. And interesting note is, well, why did they do that? Why did they shield themselves from outside influence? And then, you know, the Ugin theories come up and so on for Tin Hat speculation.
And hear me out here. Aliens.
Oh, my God. I need that guy for this set all times.
Aliens.
What if? Like, well, every time there's anything Aztec or Mayan, that guy comes out and he's just like, aliens.
Aliens.
It's just aliens every time.
It's like, or, let's think about it for a minute. Aliens.
Dot, dot, like, dot.
No.
Aliens. No.
No, I obviously can't comment because I know the answer.
Yeah, you obviously do, but I can't. I can't.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I can say that this Chase Stone art is awesome. It's
pretty
really,
fire.
Really, really good.
It's pretty fire money. We got one left, one group left, and that's the gamer.
The gamer. So the gamer is someone who appreciates flavor in the game itself, and by that I mean immersive mechanics, right? So the easiest example that we always talk about is Form of the Dragon, where it's a card that literally makes you feel like you're a dragon via the mechanics of the card, regardless of what the art is. Like, who cares? That card makes you play the game as if you are actually a dragon.
Which, by the by, the new the Darken reprint, so good,
right?
Very, with Sarkin very good. In the role as that, I was like, what?
Yeah, that's like, I mean, so perfect.
Good.
Yeah,
it's so good. All right, I'm starting out here because I've got a good one. I got a really good one, and I played with this card at Cube the other night. Legion's Landing. Flip card. Basically, it's a legendary enchantment, comes into play. You get a 1/1 vampire lifelink, just a 1/1 dark, whatever. But when you attack with three creatures, you flip it, and it becomes a Kajillion Outpost, so can create a creature every turn. This card is amazing. Like, amazing. I really underestimated the power of this card and how fun it is. Because you feel like the Conquistador, where you want to keep spitting out creatures to, like, stabilize yourself and then get the fort where it's like, we got a dude every turn. Every turn, there's going to be more dudes. And what do you got next turn? More dudes.
I love that idea. Like, I love the simple idea of, okay, you've landed on an island. How do you gain control of an area? Well, you have to attack and in order to do that, right? So you have to formulate enough of an army where you can attack and maintain control of an area long enough that you can build a fort. And then once you have that fort, it's just going to start spitting out soldiers like StarCraft 2.
You're going to have all the pylons you need and go at it.
It's literally like a, what's it called? What's that genre? I can never remember. Real-time strategy? RTS, right?
RTS, yeah.
Yeah, so this is like RTS in Magic. Like, you start with your little derpy dude that it gives you. Oh, here's your little 1-1. Now go collect your other 1-1s until you have enough that you can maintain an area long enough to build your fort. And then once you have your fort, now you have 1-1s for days.
Now you have it all the time. So how this actually plays out, too, since in Constructed, it's legendary. So you can't drop two of these at the same time, because why would you have two landings? That doesn't make sense. You have one boat, and then you're coming ashore with your one boat. But this, in Draft, amazing. But it's a rare, so you don't see it that often. But in Cube, you can search it up. So you can have, you know, some sort of tutor for an enchantment. And this thing comes out incredibly fast, just shockingly fast, such that I played it in my deck every single time. It just, because I tried force to fetch it, because it was that backbreaking of a card. Can you figure out a better way to show Conquistadors? Like, white lifelink vampire every turn, and they're concentrated. So they're not like there's a giant armada of these things, you know? There's only, like, one or two at a time. And even ways to, like, fetch it in Cube, I found flavorful ways. Like, Idyllic Tutor by our boy, Howard Lyon, unstoppable, everyone knows. Or even Enlightened Tutor, also by your boy, Howard Lyon. Even showing the birds in the book, like...
Academy Rector.
Yeah, like, everything fits that flavorful point from that point of view of a conquistador, and it feels icky, and I like it. Like, Idyllic Tutor with the bird that's, like, Holy Spirit Catholicism,
oh,
and then, like,
right,
Catholicism.
Right, right.
Like,
I didn't even think of that. Yeah,
and
it is on point.
I was sitting there playing in Cube, and I was like, whoa, this doesn't feel right, but it's right. It's so right. So, incredible tie in there, and I didn't even realize it till I had to play a weird format for it to occur. So, A plus, utter home run on that one. And you went somewhere else with the gamer.
Yeah, I just did walk the plank, because straight up, like, when you're playing this set, like...
what do you want from me?
No joke. Like, okay, I'm going to paint a picture for you, right? It's Friday night, you're playing Ixalan Limited, okay? And you're drafting... Who cares? Any deck that has black, right? And you want to play the role of the pirate, and you're just going to force a dude to, like, fall in the river and be dead. Well, what makes more sense flavorfully than destroying a non-merfolk? Because all the other creatures in Ixalan that wouldn't be able to survive walking the plank are non-merfolks. Like, this is such a great little, like, one line of mechanics that, in any other set, it would be kind of weird. Like, destroy target non-merfolk. What are you doing? Why would you even have that, right? But here, it's perfect. Like, it's totally perfect.
Yeah. It's going to be good forever. And the Chris Moeller art, the promo, is incredible. It's incredible. It's almost like a self-painting of
so
himself.
Good.
It's walking his last... Walking the plank as he retired from Magic as his last piece. You're just like, oh, it's so good. So
I mean, because you couldn't even do, like, you could do this as destroy target non-blue creature, but even that, like, most of the time doesn't work because, you know, blue creatures fly or, like, it's just wonky, but destroy target non-merfolk in this setting is perfect. It's a perfect way to walk the plank.
I dig it. All right, so that's five faces. All episodes under 30 minutes, of course. But we do have an honorable mention or two. I chose something logical, Ant didn't.
I'll go last.
I'll go with the Legion Conquistador. Talking about this theme of Legion's landing with the gamer, this card fits that right away. You get a 3-drop, play a 2/2, enters the battlefield. Guess what happens? You get more of them. Like, it's one of them.
Yeah,
finds
it's like
a little
Squadron
bit of,
Hawk.
It is, but Squadron Hawk. It's why were there more of them? Well, because they're birds. Well, well, why? Here, it literally makes sense. Oh, one of them found gold or something.
Yeah.
Oh, and then more of them show up. Okay. And it's a conquistador. There's always going to be more in the second boat, and then in the third boat, and then the fourth boat. And then they're the same 2/2 dork coming in hot. Really like that. Really like that idea. And it's common, so you get to play this strategy in limited, so you get to feel as though, man, these vampires just keep coming. It's just annoying. You know, I like that.
Yeah. So for mine, I picked River Herald's Boon, otherwise known as Derp Frog.
It really is the frog.
Because the real star of this piece of art is that weird frog in the background.
I don't understand.
Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature and a +1/+1 counter on up to one target merfolk. So I think what I'm supposed to gather from this is that this merfolk dude buffed himself and then looked over his shoulder and was like, all right, frog.
He's like, hey, buddy, you in?
Yeah, you want to get big? You want to get buff? You trying to get buff? You trying to get swole, frog? You trying to get swole?
Oh my god!
So this is a swole frog, derby swole frog.
Derby, I want to see alterations where people just like, Alex Constant, fun image, of course, very colorful. Yeah. Lighting is fun, but I could easily see him just like painting everything south of the frogs with just frog.
Do you know what the best part of this whole card is? The best part, ready? River Herald's Boon, right? The +1/+1 stuff references a merfolk. Mm-hmm. And the flavor text says, we are kin to the trees and their strength is our own. Nowhere on this entire card do they reference the frog.
They're just nowhere. Pretending it's not there.
It's just, yeah, they're just like, it's their what frog? Like, what? In what world was I not supposed to be like, what's with the frog? I need to know.
There's like not like a frog theme or tribal or nothing.
As if he was just gonna sneak it in and I wouldn't know. Like there's a huge frog right there. Why are we not talking about it? Why is this card not called like Merfolk and his frog buddy? Like I don't understand. No one is talking about the frog, but it takes up a fourth of the card.
Okay, so did you see this in the file and just like laugh?
Yeah. And I think where I failed is I tried to talk about the frog. Like, I don't understand. You could have quotes like, "All right, froggy buddy." Like, I don't. It's just like it's not. It's just not there. It's like I don't.
I love that to be an inside joke. Like, all right, we're gonna add one in. Not talking about the frog.
I feel like that's like for Ixalan, the hashtag should be like hashtag what frog.
On that note, flavor jams of the set, fun to do, Ant loves the frog. Ant, if you want to have follow up frog conversations, where can they find you?
Yeah, if they want to talk to me about the frog, they can go on Twitter at AntTestator. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. These days.
Fair enough. You can find me.
I need to know. I got to know more about this frog.
We might have an interview with one of the designers or one of the art directors and just say, listen.
Or just get Alex on and be like, dude, what's
frog.
With the frog? I need what's just, a- I don't care. I don't care about how you paint, why you paint, like what gets you up in the frog. Tell me about the frog.
Speaking of, like, before we go, obviously, since we're over time, Alex Constead has a bunch of the creepypasta. He's really good at him on Facebook. Okay. We should have him on and let's talk about his weird creepypasta and the frog soon.
And frog.
You can find me at Vorthos Mike, but otherwise, thanks for watching today. We'll be back with more frog content next week.